for AntiWar.com and Chaos Radio 95.9 in Austin, Texas. I'm Scott Horton. This is AntiWar Radio. We're going to start right off with our first guest, Dr. Gareth Porter from Interpress Service and AntiWar.com, independent historian and journalist, my favorite. Hey, Doc, how's it going?
It's going well, thanks, Scott.
I appreciate you joining us on the show today. I'm looking at your latest piece here. It's at the very top headline of AntiWar.com today. Fiction of Marja as City was U.S. misinformation. So this is the big new offensive, the biggest offensive in Afghanistan by the coalition of the bribed or whatever, the NATO forces and whoever else, since 2001. And I guess we have heard all these news stories about this giant invasion of this city of Marja in the Helmand province. And this was, step one in the brand new escalated Obama strategy for fixing Afghanistan, I guess they would say. So what about that was misinformation?
The point is that the idea that it was a city of 80,000 people is so far from reality that it is a bizarre example of how the military plants stories that basically are useful for its narrative, but which have nothing to do with reality. And in this case, we can trace this notion of Marja as a fairly good-sized city to briefings that were done, or a briefing that was done at Camp Leatherneck in southern Helmand province, which is the U.S. Marine base there. We don't know exactly. There was a colonel, a name of a colonel mentioned in the story, but it's not. There's no quotes for the person who actually gave the briefing. So all we know is that this was the origin of the story. And clearly the idea here was to simply pump up the volume, if you will, on the significance of this target of Marja. And it's really, you know, sort of appealing to those in the U.S. Public who respond to the idea that, oh boy, we're going to take this big city. In other words, it's targeted at those people who really have no understanding of counterinsurgency war, and who still see this in very sort of simplified black and white terms, and think that capturing a city is really a splendid thing to do, and therefore would sort of give the offensive that the United States is now getting started under the new Obama strategy off to a splendid start.
Well, you know, for fun this morning, I went to Google Maps and I got the satellite picture of Marja, and I zoomed in there, and my God, it's less developed than the town of Bedrock on the Flintstones, man. I mean, you're talking about mud walls without roofs.
Well, that's about right. I mean, there are homes, obviously, of farmers there, which are actually better off than the average Afghan farmer. I think there's no question about that. If you've seen some of the pictures taken there right on the spot in what is now being called Marja, the little dot on the map there, these farmhouses are better than most Afghan farmers, but nevertheless, they're still just farmhouses out there on the desert. And of course, there are irrigation ditches or irrigation facilities there, which is why there's any farm population at all in that area. Otherwise, it's simply a desert.
Mm. Yeah, in fact, if you go and look, you can see the farmland there, I guess, mostly to the south of what's supposed to be, I guess, downtown Marja or whatever. But so when we're talking about this counterinsurgency warfare, then the whole thing, right, is that Petraeus is brilliant and really smart, and he's a genius, and Tom Ricks will tell you all about it. And what he knows that the previous generals did not understand is that rather than just going out there to seek and destroy, Gareth, you have to clear, hold, and build. So even if they inflated the numbers of the population of Marja and made it sound like a bigger town than it is, couldn't this be you know, actually what they claim it to be and the rest of the narrative, which is we're going to deliver these people a government in a box and develop and revitalize their part of Afghanistan and use it to serve as a model to the rest of the country of how good it could be if you only work with the occupation?
I'm not contesting that that is indeed the strategy and the plan, that in fact this is clearly part of that overall strategy to clear, hold, and build, quote unquote. There's no question that they will go ahead with all of the activities that they talk about in counterinsurgency strategy. My point is simply that the way it was portrayed before it started by its description of Marja as a pretty good-sized city, conjuring up sort of the images of urban street fighting, such as in Fallujah or even Hue or something like that. That was a way of getting the public excited about this, getting them involved, which has really nothing to do with the objective characteristics of the strategy itself. It was simply a way of focusing the public on this, convincing them that this is big, and that when it's successful, it would reverberate much more than it would have otherwise. And again, you know, I think what this is really all about in the overall context of Afghanistan, this huge country with a vast swath of territory that is dominated by Pashtun ethnic group, and therefore for the most part sympathetic to the Taliban for obvious reasons. Or not so obvious reasons, but clearly in part due to ethnic ties, and in part you know, to their resistance to and bitterness over the control of the Afghan state by Tajik and other ethnic groups that have been at odds with the Pashtuns for decades now. All of that is in the background of this. And it's really not going to be feasible, in my view, to succeed in using U.S. troops to really, you know, change the overall situation to the point that they can succeed in this. And therefore, I think what we're really seeing here is a war that is more aimed at the U.S. public than it is aimed at the situation on the ground in Afghanistan.
And just to get to buy us off, to give us another Friedman unit or two on our clock, or?
Well, you know, it does obviously offer them time in which to try to shift public opinion in the United States. And I think that as was reported in the Washington Post, and which I reported on a couple of weeks ago, that is clearly what they have in mind. They do hope to change what they fear is a strong tendency in the part of public opinion now not to give the military that much time and to support a beginning of a drawdown by mid 2011 and the hope that would really bring U.S. troops out of Afghanistan within a relatively short period of time. The military doesn't want that. I think that was the indication of the Washington Post two reporters in the Post story that first pointed out that the reason for picking Marja was that they wanted a loud a big loud victory in a place where it would be relatively easy, very simple, very straightforward to sort of take control of this rather very small place. Which they call Marja, but which is part of a much larger district size area, which is also called Marja. So I'm sorry, I've tried to bring in several thoughts there, but I hope that's clear.
Mm-hmm. Well,
so I mean, let me just complete the thought by saying that that what's really at stake here is that Petraeus has put together a concept of counterinsurgency warfare that is very much about influencing the public opinion in the United States, domestic U.S. public opinion. He lists in the counterinsurgency manual influencing target audiences, all relevant target audiences, and of course including the audience in the United States as the primary one, as one of the five major requirements for success in a counterinsurgency war. And he goes on to discuss in rather great detail how this should be done, the idea of information warfare, the idea that it's necessary to create a counterinsurgency narrative, that it is up to the commander, the headquarters, as it's put in the counterinsurgency manual, it's up to the headquarters to establish the broad outlines of that counterinsurgency narrative. And therefore, that has to be one of the key guiding lights for the way the information war is carried out, is to support that overall counterinsurgency narrative. And I think that's what is exactly what we're seeing in the case of Marja. We're seeing the Marines put out this story about this city of 80,000 people to support the overall narrative, counterinsurgency narrative, which in this case is all about convincing the American people that we can be successful. We can score a big victory very quickly, very convincingly, and we're on the road to success.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but what about those rural Pashtuns? Is this at all about convincing them of anything?
Well, obviously,
maybe the hopelessness of resisting, or
they are going to do things which are aimed at convincing Pashtuns. No question about that. But if I had to bet, I would bet that McChrystal understands that in the end, it is not going to be possible to convince most Pashtuns of the case that they want to make, that it's very late, it's too late in the game. They don't have enough troops to hold down a sufficient part of the Pashtun population to do that. Pashtuns make up something like 45% of a country of 28 million people, or maybe it's more than 28, maybe it's over 30 now, as I say, spread out over many provinces in an area that is far too great for the U.S. military to even make much of a dent on. And so they're talking about dominating Kandahar and Helmand provinces. Those are the two biggest Pashtun provinces, no question about it, but they are only perhaps 10%, maybe 15, 20% of the Pashtun population. So they have such a stone to push up the hill that I really don't believe that they realistically believe that they can accomplish what they are claiming that they want to accomplish.
So ultimately, they want us to believe that they're kicking a lot of ass over there for the next year and a half or so before they cut and run, basically?
Before it's possible that not only will they begin a small withdrawal, which is it's accepted now that there will be some withdrawal by the mid 2011. I mean that I think is there's no question about that part of it. But what they hope is that then there will be an agreement by the administration, supported by strong public opinion, to maintain a U.S. troop presence for the foreseeable future. Now, you know, this is, again, you know, we're looking at something that happened under Petraeus's overall command as chief of Central Command in Tampa, Florida. He's the guy who's setting the overall strategy for McChrystal. And I think McChrystal understands that what Petraeus did in Iraq is the model. Petraeus did not succeed in taming the insurgents. He did not succeed in doing what Jack Keane and the Bush administration said he was going to do, which was to use military force to put a stop to the violence. What he did was to come to terms, and he took advantage of the Iranian influence over the Shia. And so what happens then is the United States continues to try to keep troops there as long as it's not forced out. And they can keep troops in Afghanistan. They can't be forced out very easily for some years. And the military always wants to stay where it is. It wants to keep bases that it has. It doesn't want to give them up. And that's I'm quite convinced that's what we're going to see in the case of Afghanistan.
So just permanent low-level warfare against the occupied, right. by I mean, a bunch of generals who know that they cannot win. But after all, I guess, you know, if they all the Marines, if they're surrounded and they all have their backs to each other, they sure can shoot out a lot of hot lead and call in airstrikes and stuff. So they're not going to get, you know, Saigon'd right out of the country or something like that. So they're just going to, it'll be like the West Bank over there forever and ever, huh?
Well, I think that not forever and ever, but I think they see at this point the possibility of an indefinite stay, yes, for the foreseeable future, meaning, you know, 5 to 10 years and possibly beyond.
Mm. Well, you know, let me see if I can extrapolate out from kind of a base theory here, and then you correct me where I'm going off the story. But it's my basic understanding from reading the likes of Chalmers Johnson and Robert A. Pape and others that occupying the Middle East is what gets us attacked by terrorists in the first place. Occupying Iraq is what gets American soldiers attacked by Iraqis. And if I understand correctly, over the past 8 or 9 years of occupation of Afghanistan, every time they've put more troops in there, say around, I don't know, 2005 when the Taliban started fighting back more, they put more troops in, and all that does is strengthen the Taliban. All that is exactly what they want, is American occupation, particularly in Afghanistan, in order to prove that they're right about us, the Al-Qaeda guys, in order to bankrupt us and bleed us and radicalize people to become their supporters and to join their fight against the United States. So
absolutely right.
I mean, it seems like on one hand, this is the kind of thing that's going to get Americans killed in America, like what happened on September 11th. On the other hand, it also seems like the kind of thing that is going to get a lot more Afghans killed. The more we escalate, the more they escalate, the more civilians are caught in the crossfire.
I agree with everything that you've said, and I would simply add that, yes, that is the Al-Qaeda strategy. I don't think it's the Taliban strategy. I think that they would prefer to figure out a way to have the foreign troops leave for obvious reasons, because it is their country. And for one thing, I mean, until the foreign troops leave, the Taliban is not going to be able to have power in Afghanistan. So that's one of the reasons why I think that they're prepared to make a deal. At least for foreign troop withdrawal in return for throwing Al-Qaeda under the bus. But, I mean, the point that you're making, the larger point that you're making, I think that shows two fundamental things. One, you know, there are winners and losers in this so-called global war on terror. The winners are the people who are carrying out the so-called war, the people who get their stars, the generals, the colonels who get promoted, who show that the military is still relevant, and the civilians who, you know, sort of cluster at the trough to get contracts and so forth. The losers, of course, are the rest of us, and the people in the target country. So you know, this is the system that we are saddled with, and you know, the way this system works is that the military, as I said, you know, always is looking for a way to extend its stay. Now, you know, I here's where I'm going to admit to my initial mistake in reading the position, the posture of the U.S. command in Kabul. I when I was over there, I had this briefing, which I interpreted as a sign that they were not only seeing the writing on the wall, saw a negotiated settlement as inevitable, but felt that that was probably the best way to deal with it. Now I'm having to take a second and third look at that, and I realize that that was premature. I think it's much more complicated than that, and that they may be in favor of negotiations, but that is not the same as being in favor of a settlement that would involve the withdrawal of U.S. troops.
Right. Well, and, you know, there's a lot of different categories of negotiation that could be taking place, and a lot of different ways of, I mean, I think we talked about the other day the possibility that Karzai was pushing for, which was going ahead and somehow bringing the Taliban, Mullah Omar, and whoever else into the government, into the coalition, give them seats in parliament, or I don't know what, versus the American position, which is, yeah, we'll negotiate with you basically into deserting your side and joining ours one at a time.
That's right.
The, completely different ideas entirely.
You know, who knows what Karzai actually believes is possible? It's very unclear. It's very murky how Karzai envisions a settlement with the Taliban. I really don't know the answer to that. The Taliban, of course, would like to see an agreement that would basically get the troops out and have some sort of process that would go on with Karzai, which would be obviously to their advantage. And the Americans obviously would like to, as you said, to have a deal under which the Taliban basically lay down their arms, or large numbers of the Taliban lay down their arms and change the overall power balance within the country. That's not very likely to happen, clearly.
In Iraq, you had the predominantly Sunni-based insurgency offered to do an awakening deal in the summer of 2003, 4, 5, 6, and 7 before Petraeus finally took them up on it. That
exactly
is not
right.
The case here.
That's exactly right. I mean, the Sunni insurgency had its own internal reasons, in fact, more than one very powerful motivation for trying to come to terms with the United States. As you say, they did try very early in the war, really, and the Americans turned them down, were not interested in having a settlement which would put the U.S. military out of business. It would take away the rationale for the U.S. military.
Yeah.
In the case of Afghanistan, completely different situation. There's no powerful motivation on the part of the Taliban insurgency to make such a deal. And even Hekmat Yar, who the United States and Karzai are really angling very hard to try to dangle the offer of a position in the government to him, seems to be very clear that he will not agree to lay down his arms until there's a timetable for withdrawal, which, if I'm not mistaken, is 18 months. You have
absolutely
your
ridiculous. Now, this guy, Hekmat Yar, was the CIA's man back in the 1980s, and he's also the guy that they gave, I don't know how many piles of, how many pallets of cash or whatever back in 2001, and who bragged just a couple of years ago, boasted that he took our money, the CIA's money, and then the American people's tax dollars, and then he turned around and helped Osama bin Laden escape, and ha ha, how do you like that, he said. This
well,
is the
yeah,
guy that they're trying to bring in. Just like Dostum, who likes to skin people alive and rape people en masse and whatever, who's now the Secretary of Defense over there in Karzai's government, huh?
Hekmat Yar is one of the more hated people in Afghanistan, I can tell you that. It's very, very widespread hatred for him, particularly in the cities and in Kabul, because he was the one who destroyed Kabul in the civil war that followed the withdrawal of Soviet forces from Afghanistan in 1991, and so there's a problem involved in the whole idea of that the United States is trying to negotiate, and Karzai are trying to negotiate with Hekmat Yar, as though somehow or other that is in keeping with the lofty notions of war objectives that are being put forward. The other thing is, I just want to mention, he was the ISI's man. He was Pakistan's man all along from the beginning. The CIA did have contact with him, but not that intense. I mean, they were really working through ISI. To a great extent, the continued support for Hekmat Yar after the Soviet withdrawal reflected a kind of two things, it seems to me. One is the decision to let Pakistan have Afghanistan. It was the idea, well, Afghanistan's not important, we don't care about it. Pakistan wants it, okay, sure, go ahead and have it. And secondly, the sort of self-sustaining, self-propelling character of a major covert operation or military operation, in this case the CIA's covert operation in favor of the Mujahideen. They simply didn't want to quit. They just wanted to keep it going, even after the Soviets had withdrawn. And indeed, when the Cold War was really over, this is a point that I've just really rediscovered, having read about this period of 1989 to 1992, the Cold War was over with the Soviet Union. It was acknowledged by the U.S. government that the Soviets were no longer the Cold War enemy, even before the Soviet Union dissolved. And yet, the U.S. support for the Mujahideen through the Pakistanis continued. And to me, this is one of the great historic examples of this characteristic of the self-propelling, self-sustaining quality character of these kinds of operations. They have their own life, their own logic, because they serve the interests of the bureaucracies that started them and that managed them.
Well, if you were a general in charge of a base in Kazakhstan or something, I guess you'd want to keep it, wouldn't you?
I guess I would, yeah.
You got your own golf course, a pinball table, and everything else. All right, listen, I've already kept you over time. I know you got to go, and so do I, but thanks very much, Gareth. You're the best, man.
Thanks for having me, Scott.
Everybody, that's Dr. Gareth Porter from Interpress Service. You can find all he writes at original.antiwar.com/Porter. We'll be right back after this.